This podcast is a part of the Carbon Almanac network of podcasts.
Yeah, sure. I will jump in at that point, Leaky. And that will be a nice way to explain how I found out what rare earths were and how they fit into the energy transition. The Net Zero Network is a group here in Perth in Western Australia, which was founded by me and a couple of others about 2 years ago, because we were reading about the importance of climate change and the potential changes that were going to be required in society and within the economy. But we weren't really sure how, as individuals, we could get involved to do more. We knew that there were small-scale things that we could do, like saving energy around our own homes, but we didn't feel like that was enough. We wanted to use our professional skills to have more impact. And I didn't know who to talk to about that. So a small group of us got together, and we decided to form a group which would help each other to identify opportunities for get involved and do more. That led to us meeting regularly, hearing from inspiring speakers who had made that transition themselves. And ultimately, for me, it led me to move from the job which I was in, which was designing ships, which was pretty interesting, but not directly related to decarbonization, to working with a large engineering company, KBR, helping companies like Arafura, who we'll hear from in a minute, with their decarbonization strategies. The Net Zero Network has been fantastic for connecting to me all sorts of people who have helped me understand what the options are for industry and society as a whole to decarbonize.
So you came to the product without knowing anything about rare earth either. Almost.
There was definitely a learning curve for me. That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm an engineer by background, and I bought experience in decarbonization technologies. But I didn't understand the rare earth domain, and I'd heard about them, I think, like most of us have, in a passing sense, but I wasn't really sure exactly what role they played in the energy transition, which is, I think, something that Stuart, who's got a much longer background than me in rare earths, can probably describe to you in much more detail.
Sure, Max. You know, and I think the funny thing about this is most people don't know what rare earths are. They're those things that sit down at the bottom of the periodic table, just above uranium and thorium, those fun ones. And nobody covers them in high school chemistry, you know. And the funny part about rare earths is they're not actually that rare. They're rare in as much as they don't often come in a lot of concentration in the earth, but they're kind of all around us. They're all over the place. Now, rare earths are also not used all that much, but where they are used, they are adding a massive, massive value. The ones that Arafura, the company that I work for and joined about 5 years ago, is really interested in are neodymium and praseodymium. And yeah, everybody stumbles over it. So for that, we call it NdPr, because those ones are the ones that go into ultra high strength permanent magnets. Now, we've all sort of played around with, those really strong little magnets that stick like you can't believe, and then there doesn't seem to be anything to them. Well, those are rare earth magnets. And it's the rare earths that go in there that do all that funky physics stuff and make a magnet that is so, so super strong that you wouldn't believe them.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
So it does make sense. You say it's not that rare, but so why do we call it rare earths then?
Oh, I'm going to blame some old chemistry guy. You know, they're also known as the lanthanides, if you want to get all chemical. But they're called rare earths, and it's a lot easier to explain. I guess they're rare around the earth in as much as at the moment, it's something like about 85% of the rare earths produced in this world are mined and refined under the control of China. And that makes it a very interesting geopolitical situation as well.
Mm. The other explanation that I had heard about why they were colloquially called rare earths originally is because although there's a lot of them in the Earth's crust, they're challenging to extract. And so for a long time, it was difficult to create a lot of processed rare earth metal, which made them rare.
Mm. I'll take that one, Max.
Stuart, you touched upon the incredible properties of rare earth, very, very strong magnet. Earlier, you guys were talking about how rare earths are involved in all sorts of end-use uses within the energy transition, things like electric vehicles, for example. Maybe, Stuart, you could just explain how strong magnets make things like electric vehicles a better product.
Yeah, sure. You know, and the reason why, digging into that, you know, when you have an electric motor, basically you have two rotating or one stationary and one rotating magnetic field. So, you know, that's how these things work. We'll pick the engineering nerd over here in this corner. So when you have a motor and particularly an electric vehicle or a wind turbine or something like that, really what you're kind of looking for is the lightest weight and the lowest energy consumption to get you from A to B. It's like in your petrol car. You want to be able to drive around using the least amount of petrol. In an electric vehicle, and I've got one on order, you know, you want to be able to drive around plugging it in the least amount and use the least amount of electrons. So if you've got one of those magnetic fields being generated from a permanent magnet rather than from an electromagnet, then you're using less energy to get the wheels turning, if you like. Now, the research that we did here when we were doing some marketing work was that a rare earth permanent magnet motor is about 15% more efficient than an induction motor where you've got two electromagnet coils. So in that respect, imagine you've got a 15% more efficient, fuel-efficient vehicle. So that's why they're super important. And then when you think about, say, a wind turbine, you know, we've got only a certain amount of wind blowing past it. So if you've got 15% more efficiency in your generation, you get 15% more bang for your buck for the capital cost of putting up a wind turbine. Now, I guarantee you guys have actually got a rare earth magnet motor at home right now. Or if you haven't, a lot of people who listen to this will have. Anybody got a brushless cordless drill? That's what they sell them as. Now they've got a permanent magnet motor in it that will generally use rare earths. So they are kind of all around us, but with the energy transition that's going on, the demand for rare earths has really jumped through the roof in recent days. Add to that the whole COVID situation and wanting to have diversification of supply chains outside of one particular country. And all of a sudden, the world is sort of thinking critical minerals. We've all heard about lithium and graphite and so on and so forth. But they're starting to think about rare earths in reality and saying we need different sources of these to actually achieve the goals that we have for decarbonizing our society.
It's interesting, Stuart, that you mentioned the supply chain for rare earths there. I was reminded of the other day when I was in Bunnings, which is the chain of hardware stores here in Australia, and I could see some neodymium magnets which were on sale. I think they were for hanging pictures. So just these tiny magnets which you stick to the back of a picture frame. And because of the work that I'm doing with Arafura, it immediately made me think of where that magnet has come from. So where the original ND ore would have come from, where it would have been processed, probably in China. And then it had made its way all the way to Australia.
Wow. There's a lot of science going around and I'm enjoying it. So what you're saying is that rare earth makes our use of energy more efficient?
When it comes to electric motors, which you need for an electric vehicle or a wind turbine, those rare earth permanent magnet that go into those motors are more efficient. I mean, rare earths are used in a lot of other things. I mean, you know, other rare earths, those are neodymium and praseodymium. Other rare earths like cerium and lanthanum are used, and they're a lot more abundant than NdPr. They're used in catalysts for refining. If you do have a petrol car, you stinky heathen, you know, really, the catalyst that converts in the catalytic converter would have lanthanum in it. So rare earths are all around us. If you like, they're part of the 11 special herbs and spices that go into making ordinary everyday things amazing.
So it's not just rare, it's like rare earth. There's like a lot of them. It's not just one specific thing we're talking about.
There's about, this is where I find the chemical engineer doesn't have much chemistry. I think there's about 11 rare earths, 11 elements that are classified as rare earths.
It's also probably important to differentiate between critical mineral and rare earth, because they're two similar sounding things, but actually rare earth is a subset of critical minerals. Criticality, when we talk about critical minerals, is really referring to the importance of these whole range of different minerals in the energy transition, and the fact that supply for a lot of them is going to have to increase in scale dramatically. But they're not interchangeable terms. Rare earth is one subset of a larger definition.
Wow.
And that includes things like copper, for example, so traditional metals, but which we're going to need a lot more of as we electrify everything.
I've read somewhere we have found some rare earth in Sweden, but it will take some time. It will take probably 15 years for the rare earths from Sweden to be used to get into our phones or electric cars. So, and in 15 years, we'll even know if we would need this kind of components in our things. So why does it take so long?
Look, I think Max touched on it earlier. You know, it really comes down to the processing. The mining of these things is fairly easy. I mean, you know, dig it up, there's a hole. It's the same as mining anything. But the processing, because what you're trying to do is take something that's 1 or 2% of all rare earths. So of our ore body, for example, at Nolans, you know, where our head grade is around that sort of, you know, about 0.7, 0.8% NdPr. And we take that 0.7 or 0.8% and we refine that to 99.9% NdPr. So, you know, there's a massive amount of processing that goes on. And these things are really, there's a lot of chemistry that goes into it to both get it into a form that you can play with it, get it in solution, purify it, separate it from the other rare earths as well at the end. So it's the processing that takes the time. And to give you some perspective, you know, Nolans was discovered, that's the project that I'm running. Nolans was discovered in about 2001. You know, they were out there looking for uranium. Luckily, the deposit was largely outcropping. So it was expressing through the surface. And so a plane with a radiometer, very sensitive radiometer, flew over the top of it and it went, bing, there you go. And so they went and looked at the rocks and went, no, there's not enough uranium there to be interesting. But another geologist came along and went, ah, there's some rare earths in that. But it took us, we've been going for, 20 plus years to work out and crack the Rosetta Stone of how to process this particular ore body and how much it is there and where it is and all those other fun things you do in mining, to actually work out how to get the rare earths out of it in a cost-effective manner.
Wow. Reminds me of Black Panther, you know, looking for vibranium.
Oh, look, no, this stuff is way more fun than vibranium. And, you know, you do have the advantage of seeing me. You can imagine me in a tight leather suit.
Oh.
There's a reason I'm an engineer.
Yeah, better move the conversation on quickly from that. I think that... Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, if this is more interesting than vibranium, then this just got like 1,000% more cool.
You've been listening to Carbon Sessions, a podcast with carbon conversations for every day with everyone from everywhere in the world. We'd love you to join the Carbon Sessions so you too can share your perspectives from wherever you are. This is a great way for our community to learn from your ideas and experiences, connect, and take action. If you want to add your voice to the conversation, go to thecarbonalmanac.org/podcasts and sign up to be part of a future episode. This podcast is also part of the Carbon Almanac Network. For more information, to sign up for the emails, to join the movement, and to order your copy of the Carbon Almanac, go to thecarbonalmanac.org. Be sure to subscribe and join us here again, as together we can change the world.